tonight, turn down the noise of the day and focus on the rest with AGZ, the nightly drink for winding down and resting up. New from AG1. AGZ supports your body's natural sleep cycle with clinically studied key herbs, adaptogens, and minerals in amounts supported by research. And no melatonin, helping you wake feeling rested. Wind down, rest up with AGZ. Learn more at drinkagz.com.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of The Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Bogarts takes. Oh, it was low and he got rung up.
That will definitely be a hat tapper next year.
From The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
The 49ers storm the field.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Jaguars running back Travis Etienne Jr. Coming up, actor and comedian Jeremy Piven. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number 3 of the Rich Eisen Show on this Friday is on the air. Week number 5 of the NFL season is already in the books, and so is the wild card round of Major League Baseball's playoffs. We've been discussing all of that over the first 2 hours of this show with all of us here, with Travis Etienne of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who's finishing up the fifth week of this season on Monday night against the Chiefs on ESPN. And also, we chatted with Tom Pelissero in the top of our number one. Since Tom's departure, Chuba Hubbard was ruled out of the Carolina Panthers game against the Miami Dolphins. So I immediately hopped online to see if I could pop Rico Dowdle onto my roster, and somebody's got Rico Dowdle on their team. Who would that possibly be who has Rico Dowdle on their fantasy team? You do.
Oh.
Jay.
Oh, good job, Jay. Oh.
Do you not even know that?
No, I didn't.
Wow.
This is what's wrong with fantasy football. That. You know, I'm trying to win. I'm trying to be on top of it. And the dude who has just lucked into the starters reps of a fantasy football weekend of a running back, it doesn't even know he's on the team. Good to know.
Good job, Jay.
Good job, Jay. Well done.
Well done.
Can't confirm he's on his team.
Hey, look, there he is.
Oh, God.
With the Rico.
Does everyone else have that person in fantasy as well that you're trying to beat? You're trying your best, and this other person just lucks into that, and you're like, I don't even know he's on my team. So that's the way you sound, even though you don't sound that way.
Okay.
Disney Plus, ESPN app.
Didn't he beat you last week too?
We're on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. That was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I beat Monaco, our director, who's not here today, so I can
put him in your starting lineup.
I can talk smack. Yeah, put him. Yeah, why don't you do that?
Go ahead and do that.
You had Tonjes on your bench.
Well, I got to focus on the show.
He's so great. He's so great at fantasy football. 844-204-RICH, number to dial on the show. We didn't talk about the Rams going down last night, and they fall down 14-0. They come back. And again, if the Rams played clean sheet football 2 of the last 3 weeks, they'd be 5-0. I know if grandmothers had wheels, they'd be wagons. I understand that.
That's not the analogy that I normally think.
No. But if they just, you know, protected on field goals, and if they just held on to the footballs, yada, 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 they'd be 5-0. Puka Nacua is the best receiver in the National Football League. Did I stutter?
You did not.
Okay. He gets the football, and it's just like 9 yards every time,
every
right?
Every time.
And you're like, oh, it's going to be a first down. And then Davante Adams is wide open. Mm. And then that means the run game can work as well. The play-action game of the Rams is lethal. Lethal. I mean, Stafford sits back there, and if he gets a second of time, he's just ripping, and there's chunk plays everywhere. Defensively, Jared Verse is just a monster nightmare. And then the mistakes come, and they lose. I mean, last night, that fumble by Kyren Williams inside the one was a killer. They do get the ball back, get overtime. They do get the opportunity to get the ball second in overtime, as Matthew Stafford deferred at the coin toss and was told, you can't do that during overtime.
Teams should start taking the ball first. I don't understand that.
Let's get to this in a second.
All right.
Because the overtime rules almost cropped up again for a conversation today. Certainly if McVay had gone for the field goal at the end on fourth and short to tie the game and then play defense with timeouts and 4 minutes remaining on the clock, the likelihood of getting a tie in that instance for him, playing for the tie there instead of going for it on fourth down, I don't think that was ever a consideration. And as a matter of fact, he confirmed that after the game while taking the responsibility and the blame for the loss.
The fourth down call.
It's a bad call. It's a bad call by me.
Any thought of kicking the field goal there?
No. Mm-mm. No. In hindsight, I wish I would have, but no, we came in here to try to win the football game. It didn't go down for us, Gary. That wasn't even a thought, but the play selection was very poor. I'm sick right now because I put our players in a spot, and I got to live with that.
Okay. Honesty and taking responsibility.
Tough to give Kyron the ball there when Stafford was so incredible in the second half and that drive in overtime.
I know. But that's the sort of thing that they normally get that 1 yard done. They really do.
I saw someone post about this as well. Really an argument as to why every team should have a tush-push play. Because you got that would obviously have given them the first down,
well,
and they'd probably go on to win.
You got to choose somebody else, though, right? You got to find a tight end if you got somebody like Stafford.
For sure. I mean, they have several of them. I mean, give the ball to Jared Verse. I doubt he's getting tackled for a loss on that play.
The Rams' next games, they're going to be at Baltimore, which will still be banged up and starting Cooper Rush. And then I see them in London at Wembley against the Jaguars, and then a bye. Then they're home against New Orleans. And then they're on the next two games that are going to be very crucial about winning their division. Going to San Francisco and get this series tie instead of being swept. Get Seattle coming in. Take care of them in a home date. Take care of Tampa on a Sunday night as Baker Mayfield's, I guess, reunion tour continues. Mm-hmm. And then a ton of winnable games for them. Not concerned about the Rams. They're still too damn good. I think they're a playoff team with a shot at still winning the division. They do have to win in San Francisco in that Week 10 game. That's a must if they want to win the division. And if not, they're going to wind up being on the road. They could be on the road at a place like Detroit again. Could you imagine that? And yet another playoff spot for them in Detroit? Or would they rather stay at home? I mean, who would be the five seed right now? It could be somebody from their division.
Sometimes home isn't even a home game.
I know, which is nuts, man. It's crazy. Especially when they're constantly asking whose house it is, and it's obvious it's not theirs.
House.
Alan and Herbstreit even cracked wise about that last night.
Always a lot of Niner fans.
Everywhere.
Down here, yeah.
Now let's just quickly talk about them. The overtime rules again. You're like, why wouldn't you take the ball to start?
Take the ball to start.
Because you don't want to give your opponent the opportunity to get a fourth down, go for it situation every single time. You just don't want to give it to them. Even if you score a touchdown, then you know when you get the ball second, you have to score a touchdown in order to continue the game or go for two and win it. You're giving the other team the opportunity to just keep going for it on fourth down like they're playing a video game.
But say you score a touchdown, right? You have the opportunity to use as much clock as humanly possible,
right,
thus giving the other team who gets the ball second, they're going to have to play hurry up. They can't just take their sweet ass time going down the field. There's maybe 3 minutes left or 3.5 minutes left.
So they
have to play a quicker game.
You get the ball and you're going to say, here's what we're going to do. We are going to run clock and get
no, they're going to methodically go down the field and score.
Even I mean, that's a best laid plan, but what if you don't do it?
And you give your defense a chance to rest.
Listen, you're the Rams. You just tied it up. And then you're like, let's give the ball to the 49ers. Let's play defense and let's know what we have to do. You want to know what you have to do. If you did what I'm advocating, which is five more minutes on the back end, a full quarter of action, full 15 minutes of action, then you take the football to start. Just like anything else. You're not deferring anything to any second half. You take the football to start because the other team might not go for it on fourth down if you're going to just if there was another five if that was with 8 minutes to go in overtime, McVay would have kicked the field goal right there.
Yeah, sure.
And he would have played defense. I have more time. But instead, there's 4 minutes to go. So I'm going to go for it right now. And I think maybe the NFL and the competition committee likes that because just don't want these guys out there for another 5 minutes. They want it quick and done. Unfortunately, it's going to lead to a tie more often than not, I think, even though last night did not. I mean, the Niners play defense. I just think you tack on another 5 minutes.
I also think,
too, tack on another five because had there still been another instance, right? Let's just say they did pick up that first down and now they're chewing more clock. And now it's inside the 5 yard line and the coach has now got a decision to make. Am I going for the tie right here or am I going for the win from the 4 yard line on fourth and goal? Am I going for the tie or am I going for the win? And I know that's why they get paid the big bucks. And I know that's what we're trying to see these guys being put in that position. I'd rather see five more minutes of overtime.
I wonder if two of a fix potentially be take out the idea of the second, not sudden death, second death, right?
Right.
And just play it like a fourth quarter where you're playing at the zero.
TJ, do you have anything to say on this subject matter?
I know we've been going back and forth about the college thing, and I know you say you don't.
Takes the kicking game straight out.
Yeah, but I mean,
again, just
but again,
real quick.
What I was saying, start at the 50. It does not take the kicking game out.
What we saw last night, the Niners got the ball in the 40 because Cardi blew the hitting the kicking zone. Do you know who hits the kicking zone every time? The landing zone, pardon me? Your guy.
Yeah.
Aubrey.
Well, Cardi's been a great kicker. He just blew it on that instance.
That happens, and that's why you don't take the kicking game out. Like, hey, let's just start you on the 50.
Didn't Aubrey miss it the other day, too?
I don't think so.
Somebody missed it.
No. Yeah. Aubrey's the king of just putting it in the landing zone and making sure you get the ball on the 20.
I was saying in terms of last night, though, and the idea of the Rams taking the ball first, Stafford was on an ultimate heater last night. Why do you want to let him sit now and watch for 20 minutes of real time, 6 minutes of game time of him just sitting on the sideline? Let him go out there, stay hot, march down the field, score a touchdown, put the pressure back on Mac Jones. I just didn't like it. I didn't think McVay had his best night. And, you saw how the game played out.
Well, you heard him say that the call sucked, which is, you know,
we all agree
what a lot
that.
Of people say when they watch somebody on their fantasy bench score a bunch of points. Would you have noticed Rico Dowdle was sitting there?
Man, you're so
I'm
mad
just
about
happy
this.
You finally gave me advice.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Do you even know who Rico Dowdle is?
He doesn't.
What's running back?
For who?
For the Panthers.
Oh, wow.
I'm shocked.
Did you just look that
he
up?
He looked it up.
Just looked at it.
Let's go to Matt in Maryland. You're here on the Rich Eisen Show. Back to line three, Mr. Dowdle. Matt in Maryland. You there, Matt?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for having me.
What's going on?
Well, I want to set a scene here. We got Baker Mayfield. The Browns gave up on him. He went around. Now he's a superstar. Then you got Sam Darnold. The Jets gave up on him. Then he went around. Now he's a superstar. So I got to ask the question, and I want to follow it up. Part one, how long until teams just stop losing their patience with quarterbacks and give them time to develop? And two, if you were a GM, how long would you wait?
Well, we've asked Jared Goff this question himself, another one that you're referring to of being in a spot. And by the way, this coming weekend, the Lions at the Bengals, it'll be the first time that Goff takes the field having been a Lion longer than he was a Ram.
Ooh.
In terms of games started for the teams. So he basically said it should be at least 4 years you give somebody. Give somebody at least 4 years. I just don't know how patient people are going to be in that regard. Certainly, thanks for the call, Matt. I mean, things got so bad in New England. It was over for Mac Jones, and it's not his fault. It's not his fault.
No, it's squarely
on Bill. As we just found out, you know what I mean? And that there was no way the Jets were sticking with Zach Wilson for another split second.
Right.
And it takes a while for a quarterback to figure things out, maturing as well. And again, that will be part and parcel of the Browns' decision if they ever do go to Shadur. Is he mature enough to go? Which is why, you know, the miming stuff doesn't play well for him. Because that is a conversation that I'm sure one coach will bring up in the room at one point. You know, it's you never know. you just have to have a gut and a feel, and you have to go for it. You got to figure it out sooner rather than later, which is why I think Shador is going to get a shot. Unless Dylan Gabriel's less like, screw it, I'm not giving this thing up. And we're talking about Dylan Gabriel being the Browns' savior and bringing the Browns' quarterback for a long time to come. That could start and be born in London. Sort of like America. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, they had to go back to the United States to... But it started in London. Okay, very good. All right, very good. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. I've got my top five list that I'll reveal the other games that I'm looking forward to this weekend. See if they match up with yours. Jeremy Piven is here, everybody. We're going to bring him out, stroll down some good, fun television memory lane with him, talk a little bit of sports, and then get everyone else on with the rest of their weekend and their Friday. That's how we're rolling into this break here on The Rich Eisen Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, Disney Plus, and the ESPN app everywhere.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Jeremy Piven is here on The Rich Eisen. We don't have it. I will leave with that. But how did we do when we threw the first pitch?
In my defense, yes, you know, most actors are frustrated athletes. Mm. I was a 5'9" Jewish linebacker. why is that funny? Why is everyone laughing, Rich? Well, there none of us in the NFL, except for Julian Edelman, who's all of our spirit animals. Yes. Another undersized Jew. Listen. All the guys were so great to me, and you know, one of the things that where we can go wrong in this life is,
yes,
we can overthink things, and all I needed to get out there was just throw it. I was filming my special, my stand-up special,
yes,
at the Vic Theater. I was peaking. I was up there on the mound, you know, doing the thing, and I've done it before, and I get it, and I don't bounce it, and I had 116 different cues from the guys in my head,
okay,
and I overthought it, and I bounced it, and when you hear an entire stadium groan, it's a problem. That's when you know something went wrong.
But you're not YouTube famous bouncing it, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
like
no,
bouncing
no. I
it like 45
Obama
feet.
50 Cent situation.
You know, yeah, you didn't do that sort of that. That's,
oh no,
that's the painful part of throwing out a first pitch, Jeremy.
The only reason I didn't do that is I understand the moment.
Yes,
and I'm not filled with hubris. I get like, oh, this isn't my lane. I'm going to go and get a bunch of practices in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm hard on myself, and it didn't go as well as I wanted.
Okay.
But that's the way life is.
And yet you're sitting here, and you survived it, and you,
yes,
got your stand-up tour. Again, you're going to Sony Hall in New York City in October, followed,
yeah,
by some dates in Palm Beach and Dallas, Texas,
and
as well.
And then I'm at the Irvine Theater in the beginning of November, back in L.A., back here.
We're going
to get all the guys to come out.
Okay.
You know,
if
people are real here.
Or you could just visit jeremy-piven.com for tickets
yes,
here on The Rich Eisen Show. Let's just jump into a few things from your history. The Larry Sanders Show,
yeah,
is just one of the most perfect television shows of all time.
Yeah.
What was it like working with Gary Shandling on that show, Jeremy?
I was right out of college, and I understood immediately, you know, that I'm on the bench, and I'm witnessing greatness, and I just need to soak it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And they were incredible. He was an absolute genius, and I just was so lucky to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking across the parking lot. Mark Hirschfeld, who cast Seinfeld, approached me and said, "Would you audition for Seinfeld?" I had never seen Seinfeld. I didn't have a TV. I'm a stage actor from Chicago. Mm-hmm. I still think I'm broke, even though I'm on a TV show. I'm living in the pool house,
sure,
without a TV. I'd never seen the show. He said, "Would you audition for George?" I said, "Of course." I'm not even allowed to audition for. I'm on a TV show.
Yes, right.
So I auditioned, get the role. Do the show. I was on Seinfeld and had never seen the show.
Right.
So I was playing George, being directed by Larry David and Jason Alexander, three different incarnations of George, and I'd never seen the show.
So when you, again, you're referring to you're referring to the show
within the show.
The show within the show, yes. Where you played the Costanza of the show that was being put on about nothing that George and Jerry had sold to NBC, and you played that George being directed by... technically, well, the real George, Jason Alexander, and then Larry David, who George is apparently based on, and you had never seen Seinfeld before.
No, never. But I talked to Jason in the parking lot, and so I whipped it. See, I'm still in that journeyman actor mentality right now.
Sure.
So, like, if you said we have an audition in the parking lot, I'd go, yeah, let's go. What are we doing?
Right.
So I just went after it and somehow got lucky and did it. I didn't even understand they were the Beatles. Because I was just on the show and they were great. I didn't have a TV. So I knew they were a big deal, but I just got to hang with these guys and they were amazing and great. And I had an incredible time.
But you were on the Larry Sanders Show at the time.
Correct.
That you took
I was
gig
a series regular playing the head writer.
Right.
And I played that character as if I thought I was not funny at all, but I was the head writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I played him in this very tragic way and it was a blast.
Who are some of the guest stars on Larry Sanders that you got to meet that were really like big for you? Because it was the real deal that was coming through as the guest stars on that show.
Yeah, I mean we had everyone, and you have to understand I'm a huge sports fan, so we had Sugar Ray Leonard and a lot of people doing the show, and you have to understand this kicked off original programming at HBO.
Yes,
so there are people doing the show who thought it was a talk show. They didn't know it was a fiction. No, literally. And it
really?
Was, and it was incredible. My job on that show was to not break. And not, that was my only point of concentration was I have to get through this scene and look at Jeffrey Tambor and not laugh. That's all I was thinking.
Good luck.
Yeah, because everyone was a genius on the show.
No.
Yeah, everyone was crushing it.
Right.
And so I just got to learn a lot. So by the time I was up for Entourage, which is another HBO show, I'd been on stage since I was 8 years old. I started Second City in Chicago with Chris Farley. That's how old I am. Mm-hmm. This was the 90s.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I had done, 40 movies before I even started Entourage. So I was ready.
All right. I'm going to bite on that one. So you're doing Second City with Chris Farley?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, Chris was like no other. And, he went hard in the paint. You know what I mean? And he was all in every aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But those were the days of Dennis Rodman, who another, I don't know why I went there.
Okay.
But someone else.
I'm loving this.
No, because I just thought hard in the paint and that was a guy. And I said, how do you do it? You would hang out with Rodman until 1 million o'clock and then he would get 11 minutes sleep and pull down 19 rebounds, still hammered, and I'm looking at the TV like this and I'm going, how is he doing that?
You've experienced this yourself, is what you're saying.
Oh, I was in the belly of the beast with him.
With Rodman?
Correct. At Crowbar, which is a gay nightclub, until 1 million o'clock. Are we on the air right now? I can't tell what's happening. I'm telling you too much information. But no, I mean, we need an hour segment because I can unpack everything. My first movie was with your guy, Charlie Sheen.
Okay, who was here just yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so imagine me. I'm a stage actor from Chicago. I just completed my football career.
Yes.
And people laugh. Why is that funny? My jersey number said linebacker. My body said kicker. But I was doing fine. And then I got to put the pads on again and be in Lucas.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen comes to town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Hollywood royalty. I'm a huge fan of Martin Sheen. And on day one of our shoot, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm a paid actor.
Yeah.
And I'm a football player. And he goes, dude, the only thing that's going to get me through this, dude, is if I have a 12 pack and a big fat joint, dude.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
Sounds just like good.
You medicated?
I didn't see that line in Lucas.
The director came over and goes, Charlie, we're going to get on that 12 pack and that joint. He goes, dude, I forgot I'm Mike, dude. That was my first day on a set. He came out of the womb like that. He came out of the womb just just a complete and utter wrecking ball.
Dude.
Yeah.
And this is a question about Chris Farley.
Yeah, I know I have a limited amount of time.
No! Do you know come what I mean? On, dude.
I'm just going. No, Chris was a genius from the jump.
Do you remember a Second City skit that you wound up being in with him? Do you have any?
They separated us.
Okay.
Because we were both a bit out of our minds. And so we were in the touring company. So he went, you know, to the east and I went to the west.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeremy Piven here on the Rich
Eisen
Show.
That's why I'm still here.
All right. So you got Entourage based off of you know, your HBO time on Larry Sanders, or that was completely separate?
I mean, no, Doug Ellen, I think, had watched Larry Sanders and was a fan of that show. My agent was Ari Emanuel. So unbeknownst to me, I had been a dramaturg.
Yes.
And preparing for this role, because that role is Ari Emanuel.
That's right.
So yeah. I was like, oh, I know this guy. I know him inside and out. And so by the time the role came up, I was ready. Like Shakespeare says, the readiness is all. And that was a blast. And my character was kind of a fringe player. You know, he wasn't. And, you know, I had one scene in the pilot. And so you got to stay ready. And so when the opportunity arose, I grabbed it.
Dude, it was like every scene, it was a spinning curve in the zone. And you took it to the deep part of the park every single.
Well, thank
time.
You, man.
You're very welcome.
That's incredible. And on the sports analogies, we would have all these incredible athletes that would come to the show. So, you know, early LeBron, Tom Brady, and Russell Wilson said to me one time, he said, when you act, is it preseason, regular season, playoffs, or Super Bowl each take? And it sounds really pretentious, but I was like, it's the Super Bowl. Yeah. I don't know any other way.
Right.
You know what I mean? You've got to go literally all in.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's misunderstood, you know, but that's the way life is. I would rather just go all in than be available to schmooze and do all that. There's time for that, but I got to be locked in because you get one shot.
I mean, the number of times on my Instagram algorithm, the scene of yours from Entourage shows up is nonstop. And there was one that popped in the other day of you leaving couples therapy because you just wouldn't countenance being attacked in there, and the way you just got out with a sort of a salute and walked off camera was just laugh out loud hilarious.
That's all Doug Ellen. Every word of that is written by him, and it was just a gift to be able to say these. But you know, my character had to be it's a big compliment that people thought I was improvising.
Yes,
because that's all acting is. You take the written word and you're present and it feels improvisational.
Yes.
So the way I got to play was all the physicality and how I portrayed it. But it was word for word, and it was an honor, and I loved it. And ironically, now we have this whole new generation of these guys in their late teens, early 20s that have binged it since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole new audience for it. And they're out there rebooting everything but Entourage. No, literally, Saved by the Bell. There is no bell. No one's in school. What are we doing? Literally.
Well, you had the movie. I mean,
we had the movie.
I mean, you got the band back together for at least.
We did get the band back together.
You know?
But people are clamoring for.
Well, where is Ari Gold now? Where would you say he would be? If you could write your character, let's do this. We're rebooting Entourage, where is he in charge of an agency? Has he crapped out? Has he burned every bridge? Like, where is he
running the studio?
Is he running a studio?
Studio in the movie.
You know, there are so many different ways to go. I think if you're true to that character, what we've been through over the past decade, him navigating that, I think he might have rubbed someone the wrong way. You know what I mean?
Maybe a little bit.
So, you know what I mean?
Flamed out.
Smitch. Correct. Uh-huh. And then Lloyd would have to be his politically correct consultant who would have to just, let's go, Ari. Let's go. Let's get the pronouns. Pronouns?
Oh,
you're a has. Hasn't
God.
Been. That's your pronoun. Has been. No, whatever. No,
yeah, there you go. He just came up with it.
Yes. Yeah. So he would have to probably navigate his way back in. I don't know. There's so many different ways to go about it. And, you know, I got to work with Mike Tyson and guys and creatively get them into a place where they felt comfortable to do their best work.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Ari Emanuel owns the UFC. He's running, a sports management company. Yeah. So I think that we could just take, a cue from reality, which is what we did anyway.
Yeah.
So I think he could be representing a lot of athletes, which would be really fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways to go, Rich. I think it's fertile ground.
No, I love it. And before we move on to a couple other things here, Jeremy Piven on the Rich Eisen Show, your favorite soliloquy, your favorite Ari Gold scene or soliloquy, you get the script from Doug Allen and you're like, I am going to just chew this up and I'm going to spit it out and I'm going to stick the landing on this thing. Do you have one of those?
I mean, every one of them, there was no kind of moment that you take for granted. Every moment was like, okay, there's something here. A moment that you wouldn't have thought of is my character, his son doesn't get into private school. Mm-hmm. And so he has to go to the actor Dan Castellaneta, who played Homer Simpson, the voice of Homer Simpson, is very prolific. And he's the headmaster, and I have to go to him and, I think I'm going to strong arm him to get my son into school. And he goes, it's not your son, it's you. You're yelling. And so my character gets very emotional. And you suddenly get to see this other side to him. And Doug and I, it was an interesting moment with us. And he's got kids. And I thought he might have felt the emotionality, might have not been appropriate for that moment. What we've seen with Ari, and I said, you got kids, you get in the way of your kids' education. Would that affect you? And he said, absolutely. And that was one of those moments where we all kind of came together and submitted it. And my first of three Emmys for that scene.
Jeremy
Who's
Piven.
Who's counting me?
Who's counting?
Guys, for me, if I could, personally, these guys know, in the early 2000s, Ashton Kutcher and I were roommates.
I'm sorry about that.
It was a very good thing. And, I was trying to describe to my friends in Pittsburgh what my life was like, hanging out on the 70s show set. We're going to movies. And it was hard for them to even understand like what my life was like. And then Entourage came out, and I'd be down in the Endeavor offices because he was a client. So I'd always see Ari down there. And so that was like, gave me a chance to show my friends, like, this is kind of what my life is.
Kind of.
It was like he was Vince and I was Turtle E and Drama all rolled into one, And so for me, Entourage was just like my way of showing my boys, like, this is what's up right now out here with me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think, people felt, listen, if we got it wrong, we would have known. We would have known about it. And I think, and I appreciate that, there's an authenticity to that. And I think people kind of miss that. The number one show last year on Netflix was The Roast of Tom Brady.
Yes.
And people really kind of dropped the gloves for that. Mm-hmm. And it was raunchy and funny. And I think people just need to laugh right now more than ever. And the sooner everyone gets that, the better for all of us.
And that's why, again, you're going around the world and the country and on your stand-up tour, jeremy-piven.com for tickets on that. Before I let you go, one last one for you here. Heat with Robert De Niro.
Yes.
Okay. Walk me through that scene working with Robert De Niro,
Walk you through a little bit before that. I'm journeyman actor. I'm waiting to audition 1 hour, 2 hour, and it hit the 3 hour mark where you're sitting there. I've got one scene and you're just running your lines. And I just kept saying to myself, if you hold it together, you get to post up against Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? Like, that's literally it.
Yes.
And so I held it together and an actor broke. And he threw the casting assistant up against the wall. People started losing it. Because after a couple hours, you start to snap. I got in there, the great Michael Mann was there. Mm-hmm. And I auditioned for him and got lucky and got the role. And then
you knew it would be playing with De Niro.
Yes.
Prior to auditioning for this role.
Yes, that's why I said Michael Jordan.
You understood.
So, for me, being a Chicago actor and with a background in sketch comedy and whatnot, I'm ready. The moment there's a pause in the action, the director doesn't yell cut, I'm still going. And so I just start improvising with De Niro. And so that's how I have a career, is just kind of keeping it going. So now I'm improvising with De Niro and having the time of my life. And it was everything that you could ever imagine and more. And now they're doing the sequel.
Yeah.
Yes.
So before we get to that, even, I mean, what made it that you ad lib with De Niro? Do you remember, like, what actually made the movie?
Like everything else I've ever done. If you look at Rush Hour, that entire scene was improvised. Yeah. Buttercream, buttercream, crack skin, buttercream. What's below the waist? Mystery meat. Let's go in. Hey, sweetness. That's all improvised. I made $270 for that.
Wow.
For that role.
Hold on.
Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan each made $20 million. Yeah. That's why I'm bitter, guys. This is why I'm bitter. What made it into the De Niro scene was my daughter gave me that shirt. Everything I said, you know, I just kept improvising.
That was not scripted.
No. Because you got your backstory. And so if they don't yell cut, you just keep talking. You know, that's how, you know, they don't say there are no small roles. Like, there aren't. It's your job. It may be awkward for them. De Niro may be angry in the moment. Why is this kid still talking? But you know what I mean? You never know what's going to happen.
And what did he say to you when the scene was over?
I we're live, so I can't say some of the things that, if you look at that scene, he's just dropping F-bombs on me.
Yeah, right.
And so that's how he went. That's how he plays. And he's so the GOAT. Bad. And, you know, you can do one of two things. You can either freeze up or you can just let it go. Nerves are an energy. And then you just start playing.
Daughter gave me that.
Yeah,
I love it because that's a line that I remember from the movie. Primitive War is available today on VOD, starring this man, Jeremy Piven, also going to New York, back here in Los Angeles. The Vic Theater in Chicago back in June was a stand-up special that's coming soon to a television set near you, the Palm Beach Improv, and then see him in Dallas next year as well. Jeremy-Piven.com for tickets. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Thank you for having me.
We just scratched the surface.
Thank you, guys. Yes.
Best of luck. Well, may more W's be flown.
Yes.
In Wrigley Field, if not in Milwaukee. We're up the toll road. It's significant.
I don't know if they'll have me back, because last time I did the seventh inning stretch, they said, do your signature catchphrase. And I said, let's hug it out, and it was Father's Day, and the Cubs haven't invited me back. Well, there we go.
Wait a minute. Look at this.
Look at that.
Okay.
Okay, we're doing something there.
No, I mean, the ball is getting your, like, are you running through a curve? Are you spinning this? Like, what are you doing?
Look
at that. That's not bad.
You know, it was.
You're rocking back.
Listen, I need to make it back to Wrigley. You know, I need to right the wrongs. Let's go.
I don't know if the footwear was a great choice. You don't have any socks. You have any socks on underneath there?
I've got some socks, okay, man. Good. I'm a bit of a slave to fashion, Rich. I'm not going to lie to you. I wanted the ankles. The ankles showing, you know?
I think that's what, are you quoting Aroldis Chapman now? I mean, just kidding.
Well, I am like a Cuban baseball player in the way that I'm in total denial of my age. You know what I mean? How old is he? Wait, he's been playing for 40 years.
He's been playing long.
He's got like 6% body fat.
Funny.
He's built like Ray Lewis. How terrifying would that be?
Yeah. And it comes at 104 miles an hour or something like that.
But he's got some time off. Let's go, Yankees.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeremy Piven with a mic drop, everybody. There we go. At Jeremy Piven on Instagram. And again, Jeremy-Piven.com for tickets to see this man as you see him on the screen. Back on the Rich Eisen Show to wrap this up in a second.
Sir.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. As everyone knows here, the logo of the show is me running the 40-yard dash in my suit. So you know I care deeply about pediatric cancer research and awareness as I do that run for charity for exactly that, which means our relationship with Hyundai Perfect for the Hyundai Hope on Wheels that you might not be familiar about. For over 27 years, every Hyundai sold has helped fund life-saving pediatric cancer research together with over 850 dealers nationwide. They've raised more than $277 million supporting over 25,000 kids in their fight against cancer. At Hyundai, hope isn't optional. It comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. All right. Speaking of Hyundai, they bring you today's top five, as I always give you on Friday, the other five games that I'm looking forward to seeing for the upcoming week that just started. My top five matchups of week number five, in other words. Presented by Hyundai.
High five.
One, two, three, four, and five.
Rich's top five.
All right, number five on the list is the Sunday Night Football game. Normally it's a little higher, but I need to see it to believe that this is going to be a tight one, that a lot of people think it could be because of the way Drake May has played, the way that the Bills could get got. Maybe the Bills could get got. The Saints gave him a scare in that building last week. And Drake May's walking through that door playing really good football.
Really good football.
If they don't turn it over, can they give Josh Allen a run for his money?
There you go. There's your crux.
I'm talking about it. On Sunday Night Football, Patriots-Bills is number five on the list. Number four is just up the road. Jaden Daniels is playing his first, I think he's saying, his first career game with a knee brace on. And he doesn't have Terry McLaurin. He doesn't have Noah Brown. He doesn't have Austin Ekeler. This would have been a return game for him to take on the Chargers, a revenge game for him. He's out. And, you know, again, you could sit here and say the Commanders are undermanned, or you could sit here and say this could be a SoFi Week 5 sort of, I guess, a narrative where team that's banged up comes in and beats the home team. So we'll see how the Chargers bounce back against the Commanders after losing to Jackson Dart and the Giants last week. That can't sit well with them. That's a late window game on Fox. Number three is the Monday Nighter we've been talking about with Xavier Worthy on Thursday and with Travis Etienne in hour number two. Chiefs Jaguars. Jaguars 3-1. They beat the only team to beat the Niners so far. How about them apples?
How about that?
And then the Chiefs turned a corner starting 0-2. They're now 2-2. They look terrific. They look championship quality last week against the Baltimore Ravens. Now the Jaguars are going to sell out that stadium and the whole country is going to be watching Duval go nuts. It's all on and crack. Taylor Swift has her new album out.
Oh,
Xander stayed
man.
Up late last night to listen to it. And it's all coming up. Roses, Duval. Literally.
Duval.
Figuratively. Okay, very good. Number two on this list is Bucks Seahawks. 3-1 versus 3-1. The NFC South leader taking on the NFC West contender to try and get a piece of the NFC West lead. They wouldn't be in first because, as we know, the Niners did win in week one in Seattle, as Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers would like to do coming off of that loss to the Eagles. They will not have Bucky Irving, however. And we'll see how that goes. Late window on CBS. Number one. The bandwagon has been full for the Denver Broncos, and for them to tell everybody that has been on their bandwagon, smart choice. Handing the Eagles their first loss of the season would be the way to do it. They do have the horses, if you will. See what I want to say about the Broncos? Come on now. They do have the horses on the back end of the defense to keep A.J. Brown frustrated. Keep that passing game down. Get everybody in the link murmuring. Dare I say booing. They have that sort of defense to set things up. The running game to keep Jalen Hurts off the field. I'm giving you the roadmap of there being a potential upset. That's my top matchup of week number five here on the Rich Eisen Show.
One more. That's I did my not boy. Know this.
Thank you so much.
It's got to be where the Cowboys come in.
Right? No. It's. I'm going to do one for the team here. On NFL Network, first window of football, Vikings-Browns. It's the first career start for Dylan Gabriel against a Vikings defense that loves to blitz. He better be ready. They better have a plan. What's that offense going to look like? And then Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, sir, you best have your running shoes on, because did you hear who is not playing in this game? The starting center, the backup center, the right guard, right tackle and left guard, they're all out.
Oh, no.
That's right.
Oh, no.
So the offensive line is going to see the Grim Reaper standing there with Mason Graham. Yep. It's going to be an interesting one. Quinshon Judkins coming downhill at him.
He got sacked six times last week.
So tune in to NFL Network to see what happens. And those are my top five matchups of week number five.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast. You can watch and listen to the Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney Plus, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show. The podcast.